It must be recognized that a new phenomenon has appeared, unprecedented in the history of the world, the consequences of which are incalculable fanaticism and nuclear missiles. An example of the emotional frenzy of religious fanatics, when the Messiah is believed to be at hand, may be seen in the account given by Abraham Sacher of the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, which appears in the first chapter of this book. Bar Kokhba had the will, if not the power, to blow up the world. Israel has the power. Huckabee quotes Rabbi Kahane, "We have it in our power to bring the Messiah." Haaretz, August 8, 1984. The desires of the Almighty are merely a technical detail. The decisive factor is the Jew's own will. If the Jew's own will can bring the Messiah, who can stand against them? The Arabs? The Americans? The Russians? Only those with an unshakable faith in the imminent arrival of the Messiah could have begun to plot the demolition of the mosques on the Temple Mount, as the members of the so-called Jewish underground did, without worrying about the consequences of such an act. How else could they ignore the strong possibility that some or all of the 40 Muslim states, from Indonesia and Pakistan to Morocco and Mauritania, would retaliate by declaring a holy war against Israel, that the superpowers would intervene to prevent a general conflagration, and might even demand that Jerusalem be placed under international rule? Perhaps those who planned this deed hope that God, confronted by the danger to Israel's existence from a Muslim jihad, would be compelled to send the Messiah, in order to prevent the destruction of the Third Temple. Emphasis supplied, there is a mindset among Israelis which most non-Jews, particularly those who lived through World War II, would find incredible. The vast majority of Israelis apparently believe that the Allies in World War II knew all about the Holocaust while it was in progress, and could have stopped, or at least interfered with, the Nazi death camps. The Jewish response to this strange belief is, of course, a belligerent paranoia. In May of 1983, the Israeli polling firm of Smith Research Center conducted an exhaustive survey of Israeli attitudes toward the Holocaust. The survey revealed that the overwhelming majority of Israelis, 83%, saw it as a major factor in how they saw the world. The report states that the trauma of the Holocaust is very much on the minds of Israelis even in the second and third generations. An overwhelming majority, 91%, believed that Western leaders knew of the mass killings and did little to save the Jews. Only slightly fewer, 87%, agreed with the following proposition: from the Holocaust we learn that Jews cannot rely on non-Jews. Shipler says that this creates a reverence for power which grows out of history's powerlessness and reverberates through Israeli Jewish society. He quotes Rabbi David Spritzer in a letter to the Jerusalem Post, "One of the most important gains consequent to the establishment of the State of Israel has been the change in the traditional image of the Jew from the passive weakling who could be kicked about, robbed and murdered almost at will. Jewish blood has been cheap for hundreds of years, not any longer. If someone hits us in the stomach, we will smash his head." Perhaps those of his abettors too I'm not altogether displeased that the Jew is viewed as actually dangerous, that even a small provocation will engender a massive reaction. We need the luxury of that image for at least a generation, emphasis supplied. Thus, we have all the element necessary for achieving critical mass, a paranoia which extends to most of the population, not just religious extremists, a majority of which feel the world is against them, an attitude nourished by constant reminders of the Holocaust, a deep suspicion that underneath, the whole world is anti-Semitic, that non-Jews are not to be trusted. Behind them is a God who is mobilizing against the Gentiles, and urging that Israelis defy any efforts to take away their sacred lands, and who will punish them if they do allow it. A God who has chosen them as the select of mankind, and expects them to live up to that responsibility. A Messiah who is waiting for them to act. A God who will guarantee victory. What happens if the Messiah does not come, and Israel becomes more isolated from the rest of the world, and the dangerous reality of Israel's position becomes clear, even to the religious extremists? As Huckabee says, no one can say what will happen, but it portends disaster. What if the nations of the world do not permit the Israelis to expel the Palestinians and the Arab states, do not sit idly by waiting for Israel's army to reach the Nile and the Euphrates? Israeli cities are already within the range of missiles from Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Syria and Iraq. The Samson complex as long ago as October 9, 1977, shortly after the Likud government came to power, a report from Dial Torgerson, the Jerusalem correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, entitled Israel Thinks the Unthinkable, was filed. The following is a portion of that report. Since 1973, Israel has built up its arms-producing industrial base. It now makes not only its own artillery shells, but its own jet fighters and tanks. The lessons of 1973 have not been lost upon this country. There has been a tremendous stockpiling of food, oil, and ammunition for the next time always. In Israel, whose people have fought four wars since 1948, there is talk of the next time. Now, with hopes for Geneva peace talks shifting like the fitful Hamson wind from the deserts of Jordan, there is talk everywhere of the next time. War in the Middle East could be disastrous for the Western world. Israeli military men have hinted darkly of taking the next war to the Arabs, Entebbe style, and even the brief war Israel can afford could cause a disruption in oil supplies from which the industrial nations would find it hard to recover. The worldwide recession resulting from the 1973 Yom Kippur War is just now fading. Next time it may be harder. Suppose, for example, that the next war left the oil fields of Israel's Arab foes in several months earlier. Torgerson had written an article for the Los Angeles Times entitled Begin, How Explosive Are His Policies? The article from which the following is quoted, provides an important insight into some Israeli thinking. Torgerson emphasizes the potential for Jerusalem. The zealots of Masada chose suicide over slavery, and died on their mountaintop fortress as the Romans prepared to conquer them. They gave a name to national suicide, the Masada complex. Samson, betrayed by Delilah, blinded and brought before the Philistines in their temple of Gaza, was a different type of zealot. As the Philistines mocked him, he threw his might against the central columns of the temple, and brought it down, killing all those in it and himself. His was the suicide which took his tormentors with him. Call it the Israel stands today in as much danger as it once faced from the Romans and the Philistines. It is a nation that stands alone except for its links, perhaps emanating to utter dependence, with the United States. Israelis, to whom history has bequeathed millennia of disaster, calmly face their options which have been increased by Entebbe and the secrets of Dimona, Israel's atomic research center. Some of these options have been only vaguely hinted at, but they are terrifying to the men who guide the other nations of the world. If there is another war, said Israel's chief of staff, Mordechai Gur, there is no guarantee it will be fought exclusively on the Golan Heights and the Sinai Peninsula. Israel learned at Entebbe that it could mount ground airstrikes over huge distances, a lesson not lost upon the Arabs. The Saudi Arabian government cited Gur's statement as a threat by the IDF. It has also been widely hinted that Israel would not let countries like Libya and Saudi Arabia finance a war against them and escape punishment. From Tel Aviv, it is 1,280 miles to Tripoli, 960 to Riyadh, and 2,200 to Entebbe. The possibility of a strike against the Arab oil fields is part of the balance of terror of the Middle East. Israel, according to many foreign sources, has developed atomic weapons at its Dimona facility, and Israel has planes capable, with aerial refueling, of delivering such weapons across vast distances. Is it any wonder world powers view the threat? If the Arabs did not destroy Israel in their first strike, said a highly placed Israeli government official, the Israeli counterstrike would set the Arabs back 50 years. The possibility terrifies the Europeans. If Israel destroys the oil fields, the wheels of Western Europe would soon grind to a halt. The Russians could just get on their tanks and drive right over. There would be nobody to stop them. And Japan would falter and halt. This is no longer an Israeli-Arab war we're talking about. It's a global, but there is a history of the Jewish people to consider, and what will happen in the Middle East may be affected by the events of the past. Jews will never be led away to be killed again, said a young Sabra woman whose mother and father, almost alone out of their families, survived World War II Poland. If they leave us no choice, it will not be what, if Israel takes Europe with it when it goes? When I'm gone, and Israel is gone, I couldn't care less, she said. And Western civilization, as we know it? The article concludes with the observation that, unless the occupier